stirring feebly, and I saw it was Gorham. Miriam brightened.
"We shall question him, Negus."
"A Gala warrior will tell you nothing," says Theodore.
He stood in his stirrups, a hand raised.
"The blessing of God upon you, brave women, and a blessing also on you, Ras Flashman, and his mercy and peace."
He wheeled his horse, and as he passed Gorilla Jane and the shattered wreck of Gorham, he added,
"Throw him on the fire."
So they did. I spent a week as guest of the Emperor Theodore, and it was one of the longest of my life. How our prisoners, Cameron and co, endured it for 2 solid years is beyond me. There may be nothing worse than being in the hands of a deadly enemy, but finding yourself at the mercy of a lunatic runs it close, for there's no telling what he'll do. Load you with chains or send you presents, threaten you with flogging or swear eternal friendship over a glass of Tej, discuss the causes of the American Civil War, or invite you to kill him because his life has become a burden. That was Theodore, the maniac who held our lives in his hands, torturing our gracious Queen's consul after death and firing 21-gun salutes to celebrate her birthday. Not the worst host I've ever been billeted on, perhaps, but quite the most unpredictable. There was no way of foreseeing, as they brought me away from that place of slaughter where the Gallas died, that those 7 days of horror and hope, of living on the razor's edge, were to see the final act of the astonishing melodrama, part tragedy, part farce, known as the Abyssinian War. For me, it was the last mile of that wild journey that had begun a few short months ago in Trieste. I tell you it as it was. It's all true. It was still pitch dark and drizzling gently when we set out. Miriam and I and a few others mounted, with the rest of those female crocodiles trotting behind. I didn't reckon we'd gone far by sunrise, 5 miles perhaps, and then we were in a stony desolation of tall cliffs and deep ravines, rounding a mighty eminence of rock on our right hand, and following a saddle that connected it to another towering flat-topped height 1 mile or so ahead, which came into full view as the dawn mist lifted and the sunlight struck it, and turned it for a moment into a mountain of gold. I asked where we were.
"Selesi,"
says Miriam, pointing ahead, and then jerking a thumb at the cliff to our right.
"Fala."
These were the names I'd heard only yesterday in Fazil's room at Mastiat's camp. Yesterday. Dear God, it seemed an eternity ago. I pictured that sand table model and tried to match it to what I was seeing. Yes, there below us was the road that Theodore had made for his artillery, winding between Fala and Selesi, with folk and carts moving along it, and gangs of what looked like men in chains. As near as I could judge, we were coming from the southwest, and if you look at my map, you'll see what was about to come into my view as we rounded Fala. Beyond the saddle, at the foot of Selesi, was a group of tents, or pavilions, rather, for they were larger and set apart from the camp of little bivouacs at the northern end of the long plain that I knew must be Islamgi. And at the far southern end of that plain, less than 2 miles from where I sat transfixed, was a great towering cylinder of black rock, sprouting out of the plain like a column fashioned by some giant sculptor. And the reason I sat transfixed was that I knew what it was before Miriam said the word.
Magdala.
So, there it was, the Eagle's Nest, the stronghold where Mad King Theodore had held a handful of British and German captives for 4 years, his last outpost where he would be trapped with nowhere to run, for I didn't doubt that Mastiat's regiments would even now be marching to cut him off from that wilderness of peaks in the hazy southern distance. And there, below me on Islamgi, was his army. How many strong? 7,000? 10? Was he waiting there to meet Napier in the open? Or would he retire into Magdala, pulling up the metaphorical drawbridge? Gad, if he did, that rock would be a bastard to take by storm. Or might he even march to meet Napier, who must be close by now, surely? And on the thought, I turned to gaze northwestwards, straining my eyes across that rock-strewn plain that stretched away across the Araji Plateau, directly below us, 5 miles and more to a distant dark line running across our front, which I knew must be the chasm of the Bekello. From it, the King's Road wound across the undulating land to Aragi, and between Fala and Selesi to the very foot of Magdala. Surveying that broken ground bordered by hills and gullies, It struck me that Theodore could do a sight worse than choose the third course, advance beyond Aragi to lay ambushes in the rough country bordering his road. Better that than being besieged in Magdala